Welcome, everyone, to the Geek Couch Fireside Lounge, the conversational piece of the Geek Couch podcast. Thank you for listening, and I had some really good feedback from the Daniel Harmon episode, so thank you guys for listening. And so this week, kind of bouncing off that, I saw that Daniel Harmon was doing a recording for the Fastback sessions, so turns out Brian Jackson, who has been sending me stuff on Daniel Harmon, was involved. So today we're talking to Brian Jackson. What's up, man?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going good. So we basically know each other because you started sending me press releases for the podcast that I do.
Right.
So how did you get hooked up with Daniel Harmon, since that's kind of the connective tissue?
Right. So I've known Dan for probably 10, 12 years. We met back in the day when we were both young and playing in bands. And my band was on tour at the time, and we showed up at a crappy bar in Portland to play and met the guy who was opening for us, and that was Dan. And the band I was in, there was five of us, and we were just floored by this one guy and acoustic guitar. And kind of felt bad that he was opening for us and that it wasn't the other way around. And I've been kind of a fanboy of his ever since. So I ran a record label for a while, Burning Building, and we put out some of his records. I do promo for bands, and I've been doing promo for Dan for his releases ever since in some form or another.
So let's talk a little bit about the band promo stuff that you do, because that's how I first kind of got to know you. How long have you been doing that sort of thing?
It's the company's called The Awareness Group. We started probably, I would say probably 8 years or so ago, 8 or 10 years ago, and doing back in the day, as we talk like an old man back in the day, it was all physical promos. Yeah. So we would work with bands, get physical CDs, and then mail physical copies of those records. At that point, it was mostly just North America based, just because postage was a bear and yeah, it was expensive. We took a break from that for the last, I would say, 4 years to work on the record label, Burning Building. And then as that kind of, we decided we wanted to, again, do something different. The partner that I was working with, he went off to do his own thing, and I kind of sat around for a bit and tried to decide what I wanted to do with myself. And the two projects that kind of came to me was to start Tag, the Awareness Group, up again, kind of in a different way, and then also kind of really focus on doing this documentary, which turned into the Fastback Sessions.
Cool.
So Tag changed quite a bit with technology over the last, 8 or 10 years. It's all digital now, so it's all just and it's global. So we reach out to blogs and writers and podcasts and zines all over the world, sharing the music that that I'm super excited about. So that's the other thing too, is that we only do, when I say we, it used to be we, now it's just me right now, only work with bands that I am just really behind. So I don't have to, I don't necessarily, there could be gaps where I don't work for a while, and then a band will come up and I'll just be floored and have to work with them. And so that's kind of what Tag is just sharing what they're doing with as many people as possible.
That's cool. Yeah. I have a few, companies that send me stuff, and the stuff that you send me seems to be really consistent. And then, there's another one, Bear Trap PR, their stuff's really consistent, and they're
with Bear Trap are great. We used to work with them when we were doing label work. Okay. Yeah, they're awesome.
They're fantastic, and they're one of those that I know that everything they send me is going to be good. You know, there's a couple other companies, it seems like it's hit or miss.
Right, if you're having to like hit a quota, or you're just looking at it as to make money, and we talked about that earlier before we started recording, making money on things you love seems funny. But if that's your goal, yeah, you'll just work with anybody. Anybody who puts out a record, you'll push, as opposed to being like, I really love this and I think other people would love it. The passion behind that's a little bit different, mm-hmm, and the motivation is totally different. And then you get rewarded differently. I get, it may not be working with hundreds and hundreds of bands and raking in their promo payments, but I'm working with bands that I love, and to see them succeed is the reward for me.
It's been crazy how, because I've been doing this podcast thing, I started out with, if you listen to my retro edition that I've been putting out, you'll know that I've been doing this for quite a while and trying to, and when kind of in my heyday when I only had one child, I was doing Indie Uprising, and we were getting, you know, a lot of hits to the show and a lot of listens. And just recently I just tried bringing back the music thing, and it's been a little bit harder to kind of gain traction, but it's been interesting seeing just in the past, even the past, like maybe 5 years, how things have changed. Cause like you said, like you guys stopped doing physical copies. And when I was doing Indie Uprising, it was like every day I'd be getting things from Equal Vision Records, from Sub Pop Records, from the guys over at Bear Trap. And to see it completely change is like kind of a, I don't know, it's like a bittersweet thing, you know, because getting mail is fun.
Right, exactly. And holding a record is fun.
Yeah, totally. And I end up buying any band that I really like for the show, I end up buying. So this podcast is losing me money. But
yeah,
but
that was kind of the thing when we were doing the record label, was as things changed, it wasn't necessary to even have a label, right? Because when you first started, you need a label. Label was kind of like a bank. Mm-hmm. You'd go to a bank and you'd borrow money and you'd get to press records and then you'd owe the bank money, right? And then you'd pay them back through CD sales. But as things were shifting towards digital and the market was opening that, you know, you could share yourself without that middleman with the world through the interweb, the label became obsolete. And one of the reasons why we stopped doing it was because we didn't want to get in the way of people sharing what they were doing and owning what they were doing. Mm. So, right, it's so different, right, in the past few years. It's awesome, though. I think it's good. I think there's a lot more noise. Like you said, it's hard for you to get traction. Maybe it's the same kind of struggle that a new band or a new artist would have, just because there's so much more noise now because of the internet. You have to break through that. But that's where hopefully like the quality of what you're doing stands out, because anybody can get a Mac and it has GarageBand on it and they can make something, but yeah, it doesn't necessarily mean it's good, and the quality of that will help bring stuff that you're doing and hopefully the people that I'm supporting, you know, to the top of that noise and get them some attention.
Yeah, I hope so. And it's definitely just a whole different game now. And you know, when I have friends who are in bands and they're struggling and they're still trying to make it work, do you have a lot of bands coming in thinking that they're going to really take off quickly, or has the climate changed with, you know, bands trying to get things moving? Do they understand the market?
No, that's a hit or miss. There's a lot of people who get it, and then there's just as many people who don't. I mean, because they, for whatever reason, and there's lots of them, they're just really excited about themselves, mm-hmm, and they don't quite see the larger picture. And so they get confused or frustrated when things don't happen right away. But the models that they're looking at are the bands that they listened to and were excited about when they were younger. Mm-hmm. And it's just not the same market. And so when you know, a group is going to put out a record and they're kind of dead set on doing a physical CD, and you ask them, you know, do you really want to spend that money there? Is that really the best move for you? It's more of an emotional need to have a physical record, because the band they loved when they were growing up had a physical record. And so some of that is kind of that sentimentality that kind of gets in the way. So the attachment to a physical record as opposed to doing it digital and getting it out there more, the attachment or the idea that the first record they put out is going to get them a bunch of press and they're going to get signed and they're going to go on this amazing tour. Mm-hmm. Things like that, you know, whether they don't have a lot of experience or they're super young or they're super idealistic, some of those things kind of cloud that, but not that they're jaded or that the idealistic people are wrong. It's probably split down the middle. People who realize, oh, we've got to do things differently. And then some of the projects that I do through TAG and the encouragement and guidance that I give the artists that I support is to try to do things a little bit differently, to try to meet the market where it's at and try to engage at a level in which will help you get more consistent exposure, as opposed to putting out a record, you know, 10, 12 songs at one time is a big shock and awe for maybe a week. Mm-hmm. And then you've shared that 12 songs, and then what? You've got no more music to share. And if nobody bites within that first window, what do you do?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Nothing. But as opposed to what we try to do through TAG is, I try to, if a band releases a full record, I try to focus on a couple of songs at a time so that I can come back to you or I can come back to someone else and say, hey, I know you shared this record, you know, here's these two songs that off of this record, or here's two songs from this band that we're really excited about right now and pushing. Mm-hmm. So we can divvy it out over a longer period of time to hopefully get that traction, get that exposure. Because, I mean, you may be not getting a bunch of stuff in your physical mailbox, but I would assume that your email is crammed full.
My email is ridiculous.
Right.
and that's the thing for me trying to get, like, train myself. Like nothing beats kind of getting a stack of CDs or singles or whatever to kind of mull through and kind of prioritize. But the emails, man, I feel like so many get kind of lost in the shuffle.
Right.
And I'll kind of sit down once a week, and I have shows scheduled out probably till the end of next month, just with the amount of music that I've received. So it's just a different workflow, but it's been, you know, I've only been doing this maybe, I brought this back probably a year ago, 2 years ago, but I've been doing a lot of hiatuses and then trying to come back, but I'm really trying to get a workflow that works for now. And it's sitting at my computer for a couple hours, you know, here and there, and prioritizing all my downloads, making sure I got hard drive space and things like that. But, you know, it makes it fun. And I mean, there's so many bands out there, you know, I don't know how, if I was just like a fan, it would be hard to really settle on a favorite band these days, you know, because there's just so much music coming out. So many bands are offering their albums for free or fairly cheap through Bandcamp.
Right. That Pay What You Want is a really awesome opportunity through Bandcamp to really engage with an audience at the level that you're at and to give value to what you have, but not to turn anybody away, which is always a hard part when you have a physical record. You're in debt. You're automatically in debt when you've got a physical record, not just because of the studio time, but making that physical thing. And so giving it away is hard because every time you give it away, there's a loss. But for the digital, the Pay What You Want is fantastic because the people who can afford, you know, the $10 for 10 songs can do that. And the people who may be hard pressed for that maybe can give you, again, what they can. A couple of bucks here and there is great. Mm-hmm. But at least they're getting that exposure to your music and an opportunity to be a part of it.
I've wondered about that because when I see the Pay That You Want, I'm like, okay, who's really going to be dropping a couple of bucks? I mean, I do just because I'm in it and I understand how it's hard to be a band these days and make some actual money. Do you find – were you surprised by the results that people are actually, you know, paying – they're actually doing paying what they want?
Yeah, it's amazing, and it's really reassuring to see that people actually do pitch in. There, you know, you're always going to have those outliers who don't, but the people who kind of care, like you and I, we're not the only ones. Mm-hmm. There's a good group of people out in the world who appreciate music and who engage, and they give, and it's awesome. And there's, you know, you do what you know, you deal with the smaller percentage who take, but it's really reassuring, and it's fun to see people because those people who do pay are usually people who will get engaged on a greater level. There'll be people who will send you an email or send, you know, a Facebook page or are like you on following you on Twitter and engage with you on that level, or they've been to a show. Like, that's where you build that community, and you know that you have those people behind you. So that's great.
Very nice. Awesome. Well, we're gonna talk about the Fastback sessions here in a bit, but I wanted to kind of get to some music. I'm gonna play Kai Alfred Hillig, and the song I'm gonna play is called Like God, and this is from session 2 of the Fastback sessions.
Yes.
Cool. Yeah. We're gonna come back and we will talk. What the hell is the Fastback sessions? We'll talk about that after this. But first, this is Kai Alfred Hillig on the Geek Couch Fireside Lounge.
I'll come like God into your life, morning, noon, and night. I'll come like God. I'll steal the bread right from your mouth. Oh, look who's hungry now and who's dining out. Pour the wine right down the hatch. It's never coming back. A streaking match. I'll suck the love out of your bones. Empty hearts and empty homes. I'll come like God. No. God into your life, wake the children, leave the wife. I'll come like God. I'll make a widow of your day, your sexy youth now passed away and just left the stem. Like a dog under the car, when you wish upon a star and get along. Every meal's an empty plate, running black all through your face. I'll come like God. No way home, way home, way home.
Way home. That was Kai Alfred Hillig. Song is called Like God, and that's from session 2 of the Fastback Sessions. You can find out more about the Fastback Sessions over at Facebook, facebook.com/thefastbacksessions. And you can find more music from Kai Alfred Hillig at kaialfredhillig.bandcamp.com. And of course, I'll be putting links into the show notes for the show today. So, Brian, we're finally going to talk about the reason for me actually contacting you. What is the Fastback Sessions, and what kind of inspired you to start it?
I was kind of looking for something to do. I was trying to find maybe where I fit in the Seattle music community after the record label that I had been running kind of went on indefinite hiatus. And one of the things that I wanted to do something different. I wanted to provide content. I wanted to do something that was more community oriented. Everything that I've ever done historically has been fairly community oriented. I really like the idea of people being together and people celebrating art and music together. I think that's the point. And so kind of playing with the idea of what that could be, one of the bands that a lot of the bands that I work with struggle with providing, I guess we call it auxiliary content, videos, B-side recordings, or maybe even demo recordings of new songs before they go on to a record. And so all those ideas were kind of spinning. I have a friend who is the lead engineer at a studio, which is the Fastback Studios in Seattle, and was kind of, we were having drinks and we're talking about ideas and what was going on and what we were doing. And I said, well, what about this? What if we did something at the studio? What if we brought people in and did a session? What if we released that audio? What if we, and that kind of, that idea just kind of started to grow and evolve. And then a friend of Jason's, Jamie, who does video, she came up in the conversation. And so I reached out to her and said, we're thinking about this idea of bringing bands into the studio, releasing music, maybe doing video. We're not sure. Would you be interested? And it was really great. Jason and Jamie and I, we just clicked and really felt like we were all in the same place on wanting to do this thing. So it basically, the Fastback Sessions, what we describe it as, it's part in studio, part living room show, part documentary. We do it once a month. We bring a band in. They invite friends and fans and photographers and writers and people in the community who support the band. Usually there's probably, it's all invite only. We usually have between 30 and 40 people in the room. And then we all just sit down in the studio, in the live room, and the artists will set up and they'll play for us. They'll play for about 45 minutes to an hour. We get to engage with them. You get to experience the music in a different, more intimate way. It's all acoustic, so no electric guitars, no drum kits. So it's ideally very intimate and very close between you and the band. And I also do outside of the performance an interview, so we can talk to the bands and kind of get an idea of what they're about and what they're doing, what they're up to, what what got them started. And we take all of that content and it's 3 live tracks that you can download for free off of Bandcamp. And then we do 2 from those songs. 2 of them we match with a performance, a live performance video. Mm-hmm. And then we do the 3rd video is a mix of a live performance and an interview. So we take all that footage from the interview and mush that together. And then we also do what we call a tech talk, which is the really super awesome nerdy video with Jason, the engineer, talking about all the gear and the mics and what he does in the studio to do the recordings, which is crazy awesome. And Jason is phenomenal and just knows so much stuff. So it's really great to have an opportunity to listen and learn from somebody who has such experience with all of that. And so ideally at the end, a couple of things happen. The bands get a basically an EPK.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got three songs that they can use to do their booking or do press or to, you know, whatever they need to do. They've got three videos that they can use for booking or for promo. And they've also engaged with their community and the people who got to see them in that environment, which is special. And it's all for free, so no one's making any money. We all do it because we are passionate about the music and the community, and we want to engage.
It makes me want to live in Seattle. I want to be a part of this.
You should at least come up to Seattle. You like visitors.
Yeah, yeah. Someday, my kids are older. We'll do the Seattle trip for sure.
They can play with my kids. It'll be good.
There you go. What's been kind of the biggest hurdle, I think, with starting this? Did it come together kind of naturally, or did you guys run into any kind of roadblocks along the way?
It has been surprisingly smooth.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only real roadblocks is because it's all volunteer-based, basically. Mm-hmm. We just all have to be really mindful that we all have obligations outside of the sessions. So we have a night at the studio, and we have to be mindful that a night at the studio means they can't book a client. It also means that when Jason's doing the mixing and mastering, he's not working on a paid project. He's working on this passion project. Mm-hmm. So he's not making any money. And the same with Jamie. Jamie does, all of her film work and she works in the Seattle indie film industry, but the time that she spends doing the filming and the editing for our work is time she's not getting paid doing filming or editing or any other film work for another project. And so it's just a matter of being mindful of that and making sure that we have good communication and we know that we're there to support each other. But really, as soon as we told people we were doing this, we had a list as long as your arm for bands who wanted to do it. We had an equally long list of people who wanted to be either sponsors, or we wanted people to attend, obviously, or to write about it. And the response has just been really sweet and really reassuring that we're doing something that's that has value within the community, because it's not new. I mean, the idea of taking a band and making them play acoustic and filming it is old. I mean, yeah. You know, VH1 Storytellers, right? All that kind of stuff. But I think it's just the opportunity that and kind of the motivation that we have that's all about community that makes it, at least for me and what we're doing, I think a little bit different.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, are they mostly local bands, or do you guys have a list from bands all across the country that wanted to kind of take advantage of this as they come through?
So right now we have, I think I have most. So what I do for the sessions is I do the programming. So I do the scheduling of the bands, and then I do the help with the promo afterwards. We have through this year, I think every month has a hold with a band. And then we have a list of people who'd like to do it if those holds fall through.
Okay.
Most of them are from Washington and Oregon. But I have, if we can get a band from another state or country, we would love to have them in. So right now, because it's new, like we've recorded four sessions, we've released three. So it's fairly new. We took from the community that was closest around us. Mm-hmm. And then as we grow and as we get more exposure, hopefully that circle will grow. But I have friends and bands from the UK that I would love to have come over and play. I have bands and, you know, across the US that I would love to come here. It would just be a matter of arranging that. But that would be the idea we do to support not only the local community, but support bands as they tour through. So, you know, if they're playing a larger show at a venue, they could come play us as well.
Mm-hmm.
And make it kind of a package. That would be super rad. That would be awesome.
That'd be great. Yeah, I mean, I really love this idea. And it's something that I'm excited about. And I haven't actually got to head over to YouTube and watch the videos yet. But I'm excited to finally do so. for sure.
Yeah, they're great. And that's one thing too, is that as we grow, you can see an evolution between the three episodes that we've released mm-hmm. so far. Jamie's great at being able to take an event that we could set up a camera and point it at somebody who's playing, and you'd see that performance, and that's great, and the recording could be really awesome, but you may not necessarily get the feel of what's happening, understand that there are people in the room, understand that you're documenting an event mm-hmm. that's never going to happen again. And so really focusing on that has been something that Jamie's really helped us with, to really get that feeling across, because ideally each episode with the four different videos is a documentary about that night that will never happen again, mm-hmm. about that band and that moment, which is exciting, I think. For me as a fan, just a super fanboy, for the bands to, you know, help share what they're trying to share, and then for other people who are fans as well. So I think it's cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm hoping more people check it out, and hopefully, you know, through this, we definitely spread the word. I want to go ahead and play another song, and this is from the most recent session that's been posted. This is And Yet with the song When He Woke on the Geek Couch Fireside Lounge.
He casts his sight at the ever silent night, hoping only something tries again to fly above his height, to strike a flint and burn a light. Where there is none to test his will, he rears his head and sheds his chill on every living thing beneath, and they will gape and hear him sing nettled notes his shadow brings. When he woke and knew his size, the quiet spoke and told him rise and leave the low to their lowly ties. You are a mountain, rise. Forces all prevail and tear an avalanche and wail and chip his bone as sledge and nail. A wound and scar are his as well, all is his or his to quell. Cold bald mountain seizes waves and freezes all the frozen graves, but cannot ever know the sway, the way the river bends and breaks, and loves the path it's made to take. I am relative of he, the bite is comforting to me, though nowhere near will I be seen, where only ice and air can be, where his thoughts blow windily. When he woke and knew his sighs, quiet spoke and told him rise. Mountain, rise.
That was And Yet with the song When He Woke. You can, of course, find that over at facebook.com/thefastbacksessions. And you can find And Yet over at andyetmusic.com. So I wanted to ask you, and I feel like I'm asking musicians and music-oriented people this more often, but vinyl has been making a resurgence the past couple of years, and that
right.
I'm a fan, but it still boggles my mind. That's even happening. Yeah. What do you think? Kind of coming from trying to do a label and, you know, just working with bands.
Right. I think that the idea of doing it's vinyl is rad. So there's that. Number one. The other thing too is it's the idea of doing, giving you something special, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so whatever that special thing is for what your community is excited about, it could, you know, it used to be t-shirts. It could be anything, tote bags. Vinyl seems to really kind of capture the imagination and kind of that nostalgia of a pretty broad audience. But it's also kind of like the Fastback Sessions, a unique experience. So no two vinyl sound exactly the same. The pressing, just the process of pressing, they're just going to be a little bit different. It's also, you can, when you experience that, you're experiencing it in a different way, right? You're having to put it on the table. You have to plug into it. It's not this kind of homogenized, you can't see me, I'm looking at my stupid iPhone and just thinking about how silly it is that my music, I have so much music on this thing. It's a part of giving someone something special. I think it's a part of engaging with something on a unique level. There's more, I think, art to it in a way. I mean, you have more space in the packaging to express yourself. I mean, it's a 12x12, two-sided. If it opens up, like, there's just so much more real estate for art. I think it has to do with that. It has to do with that. That unique opportunity to engage mm-hmm. with someone. Because I know a lot of people who are obsessed, aren't obsessed about vinyl, but they're obsessed about band posters.
Right.
Or who are obsessed about t-shirts. I've had a friend who is crazy about buttons, band buttons, which seems kind of silly, but in this kind of in the same vein, it's this token, right, of an experience. So everybody's got their thing that kind of gets them excited. And I think a lot of us are moving away from, but kind of recognize the distance we have with our stuff, having all of our music on a cloud and not really having to be tangible. And I remember as a kid getting records and devouring the liner notes.
Yeah.
Right. And so part of that, maybe kind of a return to that, is we miss that connection. We want to see the words. We want to hold this thing in our hands while it's pouring into our ears. I think that's special.
I think it's awesome. Yeah. And it seems like, I mean, I started finally buying records again probably 2 years ago. And maybe it's one of those things, like, you know, when you buy a certain car or whatever, all of a sudden you start noticing more and more people driving that same car or whatever. But, you know, with like Record Store Day seems to be gaining traction. I never really even noticed it before, finally getting back into vinyl. It seems like a lot more bands just seem to be releasing vinyl like right away. You know, I know that we talk about the Bear Trap PR guys, and their label always has a vinyl release. And I think, number one, because Chuck's excited about vinyl over there.
Right.
But it's cheap. Like, you know, after shipping, I pay $16 for an album, you know, and I got the vinyl on the download.
Right, exactly. And you can get, and that's the thing too, is that you can get it's an opportunity to get more and more of a diverse experience. So you can have the record on the turntable, but you also have digital files for your phone, and you can have the opportunity to experience it, you know, in that instant gratification, as well as kind of that slow cook movement where you're more connected to it. Well, like Kai You just played his song. His new record is coming out. He's doing a digital release in April, and then in May he's going to do a vinyl release of that same record. And that's, and I think it's an opportunity to do for him something different, because so far he's been just giving all of his music away for free. He won't even let people pay for it through Bandcamp. He just wants them to have it. And because he just really wants to connect with them and wants that opportunity just to share what he's doing. And for his third record, he's going to put it on vinyl, and it's just an opportunity for him to engage with the people that are excited about him in a different way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's cool.
Cool.
Plus, I look cool on a shelf, right?
Yeah. I'm running out of room, though. That's the problem with tangible media, is you always end up running out of room.
Right, and you start to look kind of like a hoarder.
Yeah.
I know, but it's okay. We're in it together, so it's all right.
You're doing the promotion thing for bands. Like, what are some of the things kind of coming down the pipe that you haven't announced yet, but you're on the verge of announcing? Is there anything that you can talk about that you're excited about?
Yeah, so one of the things that's really cool that we've only kind of hinted at is we're kind of taking this idea of the Fastback Sessions and taking it to the road. It's going to be 2 weeks in May. It's going to be Kai Albert Hillig, Daniel G. Harmond, and Pete from Cloud Person, who all met through the Fastback Sessions. They're going to do 5 states in 2 weeks, and we're going to bring a small camera crew along for the ride. And so the idea there is to document the tour and to provide a similar kind of experience, day in a life, kind of a diary, you know, documentary, for what that trip was like. A lot of those stops on that trip are with artist co-ops or art centers, art communities, community centers, where people are really excited about building something and doing something special in their area. There's a few stops that are at, you know, bars and clubs, but we want to highlight the places that are doing special things. So there'll be interviews with either promoters or community leaders or community activists, trying to do unique things in their areas centered around art and community. So the tour is at the end of May. I think we're expecting July to have the content from that to share, which is super exciting. And then, like I said, Kai's got a record coming out in digitally in this month, I think the 4th, which is Friday. Don't quote me on that, even though I'm recording it. His site, his Facebook page will tell you the truth about that. And then Dan G. Harmon has been releasing what he calls
the Westway Sessions.
Westway Sessions. Yeah. And so basically those are like pre-production writing sessions that he does at home, and he's sharing those once a month. Those are all going to culminate into a full-length solo record that he's going to record this summer and hopefully release in the fall.
Cool.
Which is exciting. He's been in this amazing post-rock, very loud, somewhat noisy band for the last few years, and it'll be exciting to see him go back to something kind of more small and intimate, which is amazing. He did his Fastback Session with an amazing piano player. And I think that is kind of a foreshadow for what the record's going to be like. So it should be pretty cool.
Cool. And is his going to be the next session that you guys are going to post, or is there?
Yeah. Dan's session will come out. The first episode of his session will come out the 16th, I think, of this month. What month are we in?
April.
Yeah. Holy. Yeah. The 16th of April. His will come out, and that's the same day that we bring Bradford Loomis into the Fastback Sessions. And Bradford is amazing. So it's just one after another of meeting and experiencing some really just talented people. So
cool. I'm excited for the future of that stuff. So do you guys, is there a website, or should they just, should people just hit up the Facebook?
Facebook is what we've got right now. So it's, the Facebook.
Facebook.com/thefastbacksessions.
Yep. And then there's from there you can get to the Bandcamp page. You can get to the YouTube page. All of the content's for free, so download and consume to your heart's content. And I would just encourage people, if they like what they hear, to go support those artists. Go buy their records. Maybe hopefully go see them when they come to town. Post and like on their Facebook page. You got to let them know that you're there and that you support them, because that encouragement means a lot to them, so that they know that what they're doing is, you know, coming into contact with people who care.
Yeah. Definitely. All right, Brian, I want to thank you for taking the time to chat with me about what you do and about the Fastback Sessions. Excited, like I said, excited about seeing the future of this. And hopefully I'll be able to, if you guys come through Southern California with that tour, let me know. And I will.
I think as far south as we get is San Francisco.
Damn it. Okay.
How far south are you?
Southern California.
Oh, Southern California.
May have to make a trip to San Francisco. I don't know. I've been meaning to visit some relatives. So
hang out. It'd be great.
All right. And where can people follow you on Twitter?
On Twitter, it's the AG206 is my handle. The awareness group .tumblr whatever is my website, my blog. I'm so not good at that. I'm like preaching the band stuff, and then when it comes to my thing, I'm like, yeah, whatever, I got this thing.
It's all good. Can of course follow the show at Geek Couch on Twitter, and you can go to thegeekcouch.com. You can follow me personally, Sean C. DeRager, on Twitter. And if you go to thegeekcouch.com, you'll find out how to spell that.
They could just follow me through you. Does that work?
I think so.
Anything special, I'll just tell you and you can let them know.
There you go.
Perfect.
And of course, there'll be links and all that good stuff in the show notes. And of course, you can find the show over at iTunes and on Stitcher. I would love it if in each of those areas you would leave us a review or a comment or a thumb up or something. And that'd be awesome. All right. Keep your eyes and ears open for the next Geek Couch Backstage Pass. Should be coming up within the next couple days. And all the bands that I play on these shows, like Brian said, track them down, find them on Twitter and Facebook, like them, buy their shit, and listen and love the bands. That's what this is all about. And with that said, all of you have a great week. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.